Well, greetings. Welcome to episode number 11 of Liberty Land, the gun shop of the future. I just finished previewing episode number 10. And in the meantime, I had a lengthy conversation about trucks and motorcycles, guns and recreational facilities with one of my progeny, my 14-year-old. He's a piece of work. Most of them are. Anyway, back to today's podcast, number 11. Just finished listening to number 10, covered a lot of topics, and we'll just start talking and see where it goes from there. I want 11 to be another Nuts and Bolts podcast, where we talk about range issues and gun shop issues, and ways that we want to differentiate Liberty Land from any other gun shop in existence on the face of planet Earth. I'd like it to be very unique and a standalone kind of place. Our heavy political involvement with libertarians will certainly gain us some notoriety in that regard. We'll see how far we can push that envelope. Today's the 2nd of February. The last one of these I did was about 5 days ago. So my frequency is stretching out over time. But, you know, life's busy. You got swim meets to go to. Open houses at school for your children in school. There are church affairs. Of course, there's work. You know, it's an ongoing struggle. So time does have a habit of slipping by. So anyway, February 2nd, Liberty Land, number 11. Wow, I've got 10 of these in the damn can. Can you believe that? That's like 150 better. 150 minutes or better of programming. 3 hours of programming. No, 2.5 hours. I'll be closer to 3 hours when I get done with this one, though. Well, anyway, so far in the series, we've talked about nature of the shop, location of the shop, types of things the shop will offer in terms of shooting experiences. We've stressed safety, and it's a private range. We stress that. And, you know, to shoot with us, you have to be a member of the Libertarian Party or willing to donate money to the Libertarian Party. Said donation is good for access for a year. Probably ought to talk now about, you know, at Liberty Land, who would we sell a gun to? You know, well, first of all, you'd have to satisfy the previous criteria, either be a card-carrying libertarian. And, you know, and probably we should offer some incentives along those lines. If you're a card-carrying libertarian and a member of the shop, then we grant you a discount structure. Enough of a discount to make us uber-competitive with anybody in the local area. And still profitable, because the shop has to turn a profit. If we cannot turn a profit, we cannot keep the facility open. That's a fairly elemental part of the bargain. You know, the workman is worthy of his hire. Costs will be incurred. Costs have to be met. You know, this is all covered by the generic concept of making more money for something than you paid for it. You know, the basis of a capitalist system, the basis of the barter system, the basis of any sort of system. So, if you're willing to join the party and be a libertarian, and then you'll get, in addition to access to the range, you'll be available to participate in the buying clubs. You know, the collectives, if you would. It would be kind of cool, think about it now, if you could get 10, 15 guys together and they all want the same fucking thing. So you can do a major buy. You know, you can buy like 10 AR-15s or 15 AR-15s or 300 AR-15s direct from a manufacturer in a specific configuration, you know, a custom run. They're all done this way. They all have these logos. Bang, it's serial numbered one through however many you do. And they're all prepaid, you know. So that gives the manufacturer a tremendous advantage and gives the purchasing group a tremendous advantage, because you get to use the institutionalized price as opposed to the individual price. But you have to band together, you know, to be able to obtain the institutional price, you know, be able to buy 300 long guns, 300 AR-15s, let's say, you know, enough to equip two light companies or one heavy company, you know, every man a rifle. That is the concept. Every man a rifle. Anyway, if you got 300 of them on order with the LMT or any of the specialty AR lower receiver makers, and you can kit it up with whatever spare parts you can come across on the internet. You know, whatever combinations of things seems to work the best. Rock River Match trigger, an LMB safety, oh, I don't know, a Hogue grip for the firing grip. an LMT buttstock, perhaps, or perhaps another brand, maybe a Surefire buttstock. You know, whatever the best deal can be procured on to make the individual finished component, or the individual finished weapon, unique and part of the run that you're sponsoring, you know, for whatever buying group or collective that you're working with at the time, whatever coordination you're doing, I guess would be the better phrase. It'd be far more likely that you might run into five or six guys that want the same thing, or five or six guys that want a similar group of items. I mean, think in terms of ammunition buying, for example. You know, most shops speculate on that based on their history of demand. You know, do you buy 10 boxes of 9mm or do you buy 10 cases? You know, if you're a range facility, you know, your ammunition purchasing habits will go a long way towards explaining just how high the use rate is. And that goes back to the individual behavior of the individual indoor range customer, you know, at least in a nonpartisan environment. In a partisan environment, it might be much more predictable because you'll eliminate a lot of the variables. You know, the one-time visitors will not be really a matter, and they may come down, they may join up, you know, they may immerse themselves in the gun culture, they may not. But you would certainly discourage the, you know, some types of clientele. I mean, some guys are just, you know, they just want to shoot. You know, they don't really give a shit about what your rules are, yada, yada, blah, blah. You know, and you have to ask yourself a question. Do you want an unruly clientele? And the answer, obviously, in a gun shop is no. You would prefer that everybody is on the same sheet of music about expected behaviors, you know, what is tolerable and what is not tolerable. And over my years in firearms retail, I've seen some pretty boneheaded things happen on a sales floor, both by customers and by staff. You know, if you're not the owner, you know, you really can't take a major controlling interest in staff behavior. I mean, you know, your authority base is too limited. You know, you're a coworker, and that's where it stops and that's where it starts. Coworkers have the ability to, you know, make observations about other coworkers, but oftentimes this isn't well received. On some universal subjects like firearm safety and gun shops, at least there's a body of shared beliefs. You know, I mean, everybody's quite aware of the fact that you don't want anybody with a loaded gun standing in front of you trying out a holster, or cycling his weapon aimlessly and catching the empty shells as they fly out, just to demonstrate to his friends that he can do so. Or blowing a hole in the floor of your emporium. Who wants that? I sure as hell don't. But, you know, if you think in terms of having a membership, you know, a list of people that utilize the facility on a regular basis, you know, you can develop personal relationships with each one of these guys. I don't know what the individual limit is. I would suspect some tops that somewhere near several hundred, and in some cases even higher. You know, but become the focal point, you know, for their gun hobby activities. You know, fold their buying habits in with your needs, you know, whatever you need for the shop, and obtain the best price, the lowest price, for a given item or quantity of items. It might open up a whole new way, or a whole another way, you know, for the gun fraternity to strengthen their bonds. And I don't know one thing. Eric Holder got approved today for Attorney General, and I do not believe he is a Second Amendment compliant individual. Matter of fact, I know he's not. He's an elitist in every sense of the word. It's plenty fine for the Army to lug guns around, for our boys, and for us to join the Army and lug guns around on their behalf, you know. And I suppose in the backs of their minds somewhere, the elites believe that we're actually going to do everything they tell us to fucking do. Yeah, it depends on how they paint the mission. But each one of us, at least in the new Army, the volunteer Army, the Army that has existed since 1981, 1982, you know, and that's going on 25 years, Jack, you know. SOP and culture dictates that you got to make the decision on your own based on what you know to be true and right and just. And I think that a lot of them probably are not aware of that. But they'll find out someday, some way, sooner or later, if things continue to go to hell in a handbasket. But we got this fucking Eric Holder guy now as AG, you know, and he worked for Clinton. He got that Mark Rich dude pardoned, you know, and Mark Rich was nothing but a criminal, you know, now a wealthy criminal, kind of an elite criminal. You know, and this ties back to a movie I saw this weekend. Went to see Taken this weekend, a Liam Neeson film, recent release. It's got Liam Neeson, essentially, and some brunette chick, and some other brunette chick, and, of course, the girl that plays his daughter. But its basic story is progeny goes off to Europe for a while, for a vacation, and is abducted by white slavery rings. You know, just stolen off the streets, stuffed full of drugs, and thrown into a brothel at, you know, I don't know, 10 euros a pop. You know, the expressed intent of literally fucking these poor girls to death. You know, either through overdoses of drugs or just plain out wear them out, you know. I mean, think about the level of human being that does that kind of stuff. And yet, white slavery exists in this world. Black slavery, too, for that matter. And a lot of the people on this planet that practice that particular custom, you know, happen to be of Islamic persuasion, because it's allowable under Islamic law. Slavery is okay. Slavery's cool with Muhammad. Don't mind making people slaves. Oh, no. It's in the book. Book says so. Got to be true. I can have slaves. You know, I just can't have Muslim slaves. But any other fucking religion is fair game. That's Christian, Catholic, Buddhist, Hindu, whatever. You can all be fucking Muslim slaves. And this is a world religion. In the 21st century, on my planet. Man. Something is wrong with that. Hey, and Eric Holder is the Attorney General. This is a cat that does not like guns, does not care for firearms, does not care for people who care for firearms. You know, real statist, real control freak. You know, definitely elite. Believes in the concept of the elite. That 1984 Animal Farm kind of thing where, yeah, everybody's equal, but some of us is more equal than others. And some of the others that is more equal have popped up lately in the news cycle. Eric's one of the boys. This fucking Geithner guy, he's one of the boys. You know, hey, he missed $30,000 in income taxes. And, hey, here's the money. I ain't got to do no time. Geithner ain't got to do no time. And then this Daschle fuck. Oh, man, that was bad. Anyway, ex-leader of the Senate, Daschle, has been nominated for a cabinet post, and lo and behold, he owes like $132,000 in taxes. Let me ask you a basic, straight-up question. If I owed the Imperial Federal Government $32,000 in income taxes and could not pay it on demand, you know, if I wasn't rich, let's say I made $54,000 a fucking year, if I couldn't pay that bill on demand, where would I, a U.S. citizen, wind up? I'll tell you where. In freaking jail. The government would see fit to seize my house, my chattels, my assets, auction them off for pennies on the dollar to satisfy a portion of the heinous bill that I owed them. Mr. Daschle, on the other hand, gets to be a cabinet member. And he owes $132,000. He's supposed to have accountants. He's supposed to be smart. They're supposed to be people that know what the fuck they're doing. But he's passing it off as an oversight. Geithner passed it off as an oversight. He didn't get the fucking memo. He don't remember reading it. He was so busy, you know, with the International Monetary Fund engineering one financial miracle after another that he really never had time to take a look at any email that came in from personnel. I mean, his people were supposed to look at that for him. Obviously, there was a failure in the system. But it doesn't mean he shouldn't be the Secretary of the Treasury and run the fucking IRS. Hey, man. It's a hopey-changey kind of thing, I suppose. But it doesn't bode well for me. And it doesn't bode well for my industry. And it doesn't bode well for the gun-buying and firearm-shooting public. And here in Atlanta, you still have the same fucking problem we had last week, last month, last year, 5 years ago. There's nowhere inside the perimeter to go shoot. And there's certainly no place inside the perimeter to go and become politically engaged. You know, perhaps discover there is a measure of power available to you as a voter. You know, if you act in concert with other voters of like minds, things can happen. And it doesn't take a hell of a lot of people. I mean, Barack Obama got into the presidency with a 13 million strong email list. Out of 100 million voters, that's like 13%. 13% dictated terms, 13% decided the election. Well, if 13% can do it, I bet 10% can. You know, and if the 10% position themselves correctly, maybe they can dictate terms in 2010 here in Georgia, 2012 nationally. Who knows? It would be interesting to find out, though. And so, the Liberty Land Project rolls on. And I'll speak with you again, well, in the next few days, I suppose. Once again, episode number 11, Liberty Land, the Indoor Range and Gun Shop, February 2nd. And we're finishing up at about 10:30. That's a good deal. Thank you for your attention.